The tongue is actually made for this purpose of vibrating. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Not that we evolved out of some chemical soup, according to Charles Darwin. Actually, your emanations from the Supreme. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 10, text number 8. Aham sravasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti vad bhava jante mung buddha bhava samandita. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their heart. So we are emanations from that Supreme Person. We were giving one lecture in a school in Finland, and we asked the students, why do you exist? And one boy explained, because my mother and father wanted to have a baby. That's why I exist. But the young boy, he did not realize the Atma. But actually, he has had millions of mothers and fathers for millions of births. He was existing long before his mother and father decided to have a baby. So it's very important for us to actually understand why we exist. Krishna is there. He is called Rama, the Supreme Enjoyer. And everything Krishna does, he does for his own pleasure. He is simply Enjoyer. He doesn't have to report to work tomorrow morning. He doesn't have to pay taxes. He has no duty, no obligation to fulfill. So, for his own happiness, he is expanding from himself millions and billions of living energies. Each one of us is an expansion of Krishna, his own energy. He's expanding us from himself for the purpose of rasa. He wants to have loving relationship with each and every one of us. And each one of us is unique. Just as no two snowflakes are the same. There are no two jiva souls which are the same. Every single jiva soul is unique, totally different. So Krishna is manifesting from himself an unlimited number of varieties of jiva souls. So he can have unlimited numbers of varieties of loving relationships, types, various flavors of relationships. Just like when there is a feast, you have so many varieties of preparations. If you went to one feast, and they said, okay, now we're going to serve out all the preparations. They brought you plain white rice, first preparation. Second preparation, plain white rice. The third preparation, plain white rice. The fourth preparation, plain white rice. You see, that wouldn't be a very interesting feast, would it? Nothing but plain white rice. No, a feast means many, many varieties of all, you know, chutneys and samosa, pakora, puri, chapati, sabji, rasagula, sandesh, gulab jamun, a fruit salad, you know, so many varieties of preparations are there. That is feast. So, Krishna is the supreme feast enjoyer. And his feast is to enjoy loving relationship with an unlimited number of varieties of types of persons, jivas. Jiva means personality, different types of person. So each one of us has our own unique qualities, our own unique characteristics. And each one of us has an ability to please and satisfy Krishna in our own unique way. So, if we don't surrender to Krishna, we're actually cheating him out of a particular type of happiness that he wants to derive from relationship with us. So if we use our intelligence and realize that I'm really not this body, I'm really a spiritual being. I am existing by the grace of God for the purpose of giving him happiness. That's why I exist. That is the natural function of my existence. Please the Supreme Person. So if one realizes that, that's why I exist. And you actually then act in accordance with who you really are. Then you will find that you taste a happiness. You taste a pleasure. You taste a satisfaction, which is completely unlimited in scope. Completely unlimited. This is described in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahma Saukyam Tvanantam. One actually experiences a flavor, a taste, a sweetness, a happiness, a satisfaction, a fulfillment, which is unlimited in scope. Now you show me anything in this material world that can compete with that. Some may say, well, you know, if I could win $10 million in the lottery, that'd be pretty good. But if you look at the lives of people who win the lottery, they're not very happy people, actually. If you study the life of somebody who wins the lottery and see what kind of life they live, see, they're not happy. Money doesn't make you happy, really. Because it doesn't touch the soul. If you're starving to death, you're super hungry, and I say, you know, I just offer some food to your clothing. Say, here, you're really hungry. You dip your shirt sleeve in this dal. You see? Will that satisfy your hunger? If I simply put your shirt sleeve in a bowl of soup and let the shirt soak up the soup, will that give you any nourishment? If your shirt becomes saturated with soup, will that nourish you? No. So all of our attempts at enjoyment in this world are simply trying to satisfy the covering, the garment that the soul is wearing, that's all. But not actually touching the soul with them. So it's no wonder that people in this most opulent, powerful, prestigious country known as the United States of America, it's no wonder people are so miserable here. It's no wonder they're so miserable. They have all facility for enjoyment. But it's external of the problem. It's all external. It doesn't touch the soul within. So this is the great knowledge which is coming from Bhagavad Gita. This is the greatest knowledge, the greatest wisdom, the greatest heritage, the greatest culture in the history of the universe. How old is this culture, this Vedic culture? When did it begin in history? Well, the real fact is it has no beginning. This Vedic wisdom is eternal. There's no beginning to Vedic religion. It doesn't begin at any point in time. It's timeless. The nature of the soul is to know things as they are and to act in accordance with things as they are. That is called Vedic wisdom and Vedic lifestyle. To know things as they are and act in accordance with the reality that is. That is Vedic lifestyle. Krishna consciousness. You can trace out historically that Vedic wisdom was revealed to Brahma at the beginning of the universe. And we actually know how long ago that was. It was 155 trillion years ago. Lord Krishna gave the Vedic wisdom to Brahmaji. But he's always been doing that. Every time a universe comes into existence, that knowledge is revealed. But in this particular universe, we can trace out 155 trillion years. In this particular history that we're going through now, this Vedic system, Vedic knowledge has been around for 155 trillion years. You compare that with Christianity, with Judaism, with Islam, and they're just recent, very recent things. You see. This is the original culture in this universe, original human culture. And even up until 5,000 years ago, for millions and millions of years, there were saintly kings based in India who were ruling this planet. It's only in the last 5,000 years that Vedic monarchy was dismantled by the influence of Kali Yuga. Formerly, the whole planet was under one administration. India was the capital of the world. And even in more recent time, I studied some, in the history, I studied Western history. There was one explorer, his name, Marco Polo. During the, several, just only a few centuries ago, he was going to India from Europe. And he wrote, this is the most opulent place in the whole world. So actually, this India, because it has become, because India has lost its own culture, you see, the Mughals came and forced their culture upon India, and the Britishers came, forced their culture on India. Now even they have independence, but now they don't even want their own culture anymore. Time magazine had a big article, India Inc., India Incorporated, how India is becoming, you know, the high tech, the new up and coming high tech place, where, you know, all the big corporations are farming out their service departments, customer service departments to India. They're the customer service department for the world, for high tech. Well, where's the Indian culture? Where's the Vedic culture? It's practically finished. But we are very fortunate. One great saintly personality. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Sri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, has come for the purpose of reviving that original science of the self. It is called in Sanskrit language Atma Tattva. He has come to revive the original science of the self, which has been lost to the world. Atma Tattva means you simply know who you are, that's all. And once you know who you are, then you learn how to be who you are. In the modern day world, they teach you, you're a boy, you're a girl, you're a man, you're a woman, you're American, you're Indian, now be a wonderful, successful woman, a wonderful, successful man. See, that's how they train you. But how can you be satisfied trying to be something that you're not? Well, I told you, you're a donkey. Now learn how to be a very good donkey. How successful can you be at being a good donkey when you're not a donkey? You may try very hard to be a very good donkey, but you're not a donkey. You may learn how to bray like a donkey and carry bricks on the back like a donkey in India, working very hard for the big corporations. You see, But you can never be satisfied being a donkey because you're not a donkey. You're an eternal spiritual being, in quality one with God. So we study, we go to college, we go to university, try to learn how to fit into the corporate structure and be a good cog in the some big corporate machine somewhere. But we're never happy by doing that, actually. You know, we become successful and move up the corporate ladder and make big dollars and have a huge paycheck every month. We're never really satisfied because it's not us. It's not us. If you want to really be satisfied, then you have to come back to the real position. Who am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going? What is my destination? How can I achieve it? These questions we must ask, and we must get the answers. So wherever you get those answers, there are three places to get those answers. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And the bona fide spiritual master, we can learn things as they are. That's why it is stated, the Charyavan Purusha Veda. One who has a bona fide spiritual master knows everything. That person knows everything. And what is the second item? Guru, Sadhu. That's the devotees. The devotees of the Lord. If we can get the association of the Lord's devotees, and by their association, we will understand what is real and what is not real. We will gain knowledge. Not only theoretical knowledge, but by seeing what the devotees do, how they live, how they dress, how they speak, how they think, how they act, how they eat, what they do on the 4th of July for fun. You see, by seeing the devotees, what they do, and trying to model yourself after the devotees, then you will find that you will experience a happiness, a pleasure. You will taste a nectar which is so sublime that no amount of money in this world, not even the wealth of Bill Gates, could purchase even a tiny percentage of that pleasure. And the third item, that is called Shastra, Scripture. We have so many nice Shastras here. The books of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada are the most perfect presentation of Shastra available in the world. Not that they are just the most perfect, they are absolutely perfect. Presentation of the Vedic wisdom in a way which is comprehensible for us right here, right now. So if we take advantage of these three things, Guru, the spiritual master, Sadhus, the devotees of the Lord, and the Shastra, the books of Srila Prabhupada. If we take advantage of these three things, then we'll actually become self-realized. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, the goal of this human life is to become self-realized. That's the goal of the human life. If we take shelter of these three things, gurus, sadhus, and shastra, we'll become self-realized. You may say, well, I don't know, how can I become self-realized? I got to go to work and, you know, have a family to maintain. And don't expect me to become self-realized. I can't just sit all day and meditate. So I'm going to be worried, well, if I get into this too much, how am I going to earn my living? I mean, how can I report to work if I'm just in a blissful Krishna consciousness all the time? How could I possibly go to work again? But no, that's an incorrect understanding. Who is the perfect example of the person who became Krishna conscious? Arjuna. Arjuna was bewildered by his job, his occupational duties. So he told Krishna, Krishna, I'm not going to work today. I can't handle my job anymore. I'm not going to work. I'm dropping my arrows on the chariot and that's it. I'm not going to go to work today. I'm going to turn off my computer and that's it. I'm not going to do my work today. put the bows and arrows on the... But no, Krishna said, no, you do your occupational duty. You perform that, but do not do it for your own sense enjoyment. You see. Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat jdahoti, dadasi, yat tapashashi kontaya, tat karushva, madarpanam. You see. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So this is the key. If you will take whatever you are doing now, you don't have to stop acting in this world. Take your natural occupational duties, take your natural activities of eating, offering, giving away, performing austerities. Take these things and connect all of them with Krishna. And if you do so, you'll become a spiritually enlightened being. And you won't, it's not that you'll become backwards materially. No, because your mind is peaceful. Actually, you'll be even better off materially. You'll be more peaceful, more cool-headed, and you'll be able to function better in the material world also. A devotee doesn't lose anything. People are thinking, well, if I get too much in the spiritual life, my material life will suffer. But no. There are two tracks. The train runs on two tracks. They're parallel with each other. Vidyam shavidyam yastad veda vayamsaha. Sri Shapanasat says, you must cultivate, only that person who cultivates knowledge of nescience and transcendence side by side can achieve the blessings of immortality. You see? So we must cultivate both. We're already cultivating material life. We're already doing that. So now we have to also cultivate, parallel to that, side by side, cultivate spiritual life. And by cultivating spiritual life, then everything becomes very, very wonderful, very smooth, very happy. Sometimes people say, well, does that mean I'll never get sick, I'll never get old, I'll never have any injuries or accidents, everything in the material world become, you know, like Vaikuntha? No. We still, devotee still has to go through birth, death, old age, and disease. Well, this will be our last time to go through it. And because the devotee knows that I'm getting out of it, this is my last lifetime in this material world, then it becomes very tolerable. You see? It becomes tolerable. If you realize this is my last time that I'm going to get old and get sick and die, my last time, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm out of here. You see? You're working at XYZ Corporation is really a tough position. It, you know, you just got hired somewhere else, and you know this is your last day at the office, and you're wrapping it up. You know, it's a hard day, but you know this is my last day here, and I'm moving on to the most incredible position you could ever expect, unlimited paycheck, and no anxiety. Just, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasadam and celebrating wonderful festivals with Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. So your last day at XYZ Corporation, it's tolerable because you know your last experience of birth, death, old age, and disease that you've suffered in for millions of lifetimes. Now you know you're out of here. It's tolerable. So we're asking all of you, if you've not already made this commitment, if you have not already made this commitment, we're asking each and every one of you right now within your heart to make this commitment to realize who you actually are. Does anybody here not want to know who they are? Anybody who would like to remain in ignorance as to their actual eternal identity? Who prefer to just be an illusion? Like a turtle who just wants to keep his head inside the shell? Anybody in that mood? Any show of hands? No. Good. So, if you haven't already made that commitment, then kindly make this commitment now that I will dedicate the rest of my life to realizing who I am and to actually being able to fully manifest that in my thoughts, words, and deeds at every minute, in all times, all places, and circumstances. You see. Is there a name for that? Yes, it is called Krishna consciousness. Called Krishna consciousness. The science of knowing who you are and being who you are. To know your actual identity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And your actual perfection of existence is to become in perfect harmony with that Supreme Person who's by whose sweet will you are existing at this very minute. To completely harmonize yourself with that Supreme Person. See, there's only really two ways you can exist. And one is in a state of harmony, and the other way is in a state of disharmony. 99.9999999% of the world population is in a state of disharmony. That's why there's so much chaos everywhere in the world. It's disharmony going on here. But if we can learn the science of how to harmonize with our source, Krishna, or if you think that's some sectarian name, you can say God, or you can say Jehovah or Allah. God has unlimited names. Any name for the Supreme is suitable to describe that source. We prefer the name Krishna because the Sanskrit word Krishna just happens to be the most scientifically accurate word for the Supreme. That's all. If you prefer another name, that's all right. We have no objection. Vishnu or Rama or Govinda, Nrisimha. We have no objection. Narayan. Those are also very powerful names. But the name Krishna is the perfect name. In all of Vedic wisdom, the name Krishna is the most perfect name for the Supreme. So therefore we chant Krishna, the name Krishna usually, and that name gives great, great feeling of connection with God. You see. We actually, just like the child, want to be with the mother and can never be happy, can never be satisfied unless it is on the lap of the mother. Actually, we can never be happy unless we are connected with Krishna. The crying child, they may try to pacify him so many ways. One person will pick him up and pet him, come on, little baby, be happy. He still cries. Another person will try, oh, come on, little baby, be happy. They pass the child around, but the child is never satisfied until the child is back in the lap of mother. So we may try so many ways to be happy, in this way and that way. But only when we come back to Krishna, then we can be happy and satisfied. All we have to do is come back to Krishna. And then we will be happy. So we are very happy to see how nicely you are chanting the holy name of Krishna. This is very inspiring and very wonderful thing you are doing here. In the sunny state of Florida. You're bringing the real sun, the Krishna sun. They call it the sun state, but actually it is dark. Yeah. No Krishna. Wherever the holy names are being chanted, you see, that is the real sun. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. You see, wherever there is Krishna, there can be no Maya. So continue in this way, chanting with great enthusiasm and determination. Take up this process very seriously. We encourage all of you who are not yet chanting on the prayer beads, the japa beads, to begin chanting. This way you can be connected every day, just like you make sure your mobile phone is charged before you head out. You see, who wants to have a dead mobile phone? What is the use? Why pay your monthly fee for a dead phone? You see? So every day you must charge your spiritual batteries before you leave the house. sit down nicely and chant Japa Mala. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama,
Hare Rama.
And by that intensified chanting, Prabhupada recommends before sunrise. I don't know if all of you are doing that. Prabhupada recommends 16 rounds. I just saw this recently reading the Veda base. 16 rounds before sunrise is very, very potent. Those early morning japa is very powerful. So people chant 16 rounds of japa, at least 16 rounds of japa mala before sunrise. That will give you great spiritual energy. You can go anywhere throughout the day in your occupational duties, shopping, the doctor's office, whatever you have to do, you can go there and you can feel connected with Krishna. Because you charge your spiritual batteries fully in the morning. You can make it all the way through the whole 24 hours to your next japa session the next morning. So this japa, we ask everyone, chant the japa mala. This is charging your spiritual battery every day. And follow our four principles. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. Because these things, if we indulge in them, they are pouring water. By chanting, we're lighting the fire of bhakti, the fire of devotion. But by engaging in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, we're pouring water on the fire. So lead a pure saintly life. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. At the same time, chant at least 16 rounds every day in your japa beads. And in this way, you become qualified to take shelter of one of our wonderful spiritual masters in ISKCON. Prabhupada, of course, is the guru of all of us. That makes us all one big family. But now that he has departed, he has instructed that his disciples should initiate disciples, to connect them with him and all the acharyas. So you can choose of the many spiritual masters in our society which one inspires you the most, and you can get initiated. And that way you're formally connected with Prabhupada, with Bhaktisiddhanta, and all the acharyas, all the great acharyas. You become directly connected with all the great acharyas. Just like a lamp is a very nice thing, but if it's not plugged into the wall, what good is it? So when we take diksha, our initiation, we are plugged into the powerhouse, the Krishna powerhouse, fully plugged in. So everyone should do like that. Become fixed in these principles, get initiated, and then you'll be very solidly situated under the guidance of your spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, and Prabhupada's books, how to quickly and easily completely purify your consciousness. Become a fully spiritually enlightened being. You know what Prabhupada told me? He wrote me one letter. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So we are actually meant to come to this platform where we can directly see God face to face. Just like we can see each other now face to face. I'm seeing you, you're seeing me. So we become completely purified. That all the dirt of material contamination is completely washed off of the heart. Then we can directly perceive God with our own eyes. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena sandhaksa daiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama shundanam achintya gunasvarupam Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. When your eyes become purified by that ointment known as Premanjana, the ointment of love of God, then you'll be able to see Krishna everywhere, within and without. So we are meant to come to that platform, where we can directly perceive God in all times, all places, and all circumstances. We are meant to come to that platform. That is perfection. Pure love of God. When you become a pure lover of God, then the Lord will reveal Himself personally to you. And you'll have that intimacy with the Supreme Person Himself. You will have that intimacy with Him. That is the real meaning of culture, human culture. Is to educate and elevate the human being to that point Do you have a question? Oh, okay. Actually, we can open it up if someone does have questions. I'll be happy to try to answer them. Does anyone have a question? Do you have a question? All right, speak loudly.
I'm wondering, like, sometimes we see older devotees and they say, oh, these, like, the early years were the best years of my devotional life, and I'm wondering how to, like, over the period, like in the long run of Krishna consciousness, how to, like, maintain and increase enthusiasm and not become, like, loose in devotional service or just casual with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a very good question. She's saying that many devotees say, yeah, the best year is my early years. I was strictly following then. I was tasting the nectar somehow or other. You know, I've drifted away from strictly following and not tasting so much nectar now. Like that? Yeah. The real fact is that if someone is properly practicing Krishna consciousness, if someone is properly situated in the path of Krishna bhakti, it will get better and better and better. Just like I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for 35 years now, since 1971. And I can honestly tell you I'm tasting much more nectar now than I did when I first started. I mean, it's just scads more nectar now than I used to taste. How am I doing that? Well, it's the mercy of Prabhupada. Actually, I simply obeyed Prabhupada. It's simply a matter of obeying your spiritual master. That's the real, that's all you have to do is obey your guru. Prabhupada gave me an order when I first... He told me, he noted, I had written Prabhupada one letter, and something I said in the letter, Prabhupada appreciated it. He said, I can see that you're a very sincere, enthusiastic boy. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So in our movement, we've seen so many ups and downs over the last 35 years, and there will be many more ups and downs along the roadway. Just like on the roadway, even on the interstate, sometimes there's construction, there's detours, there's automobile accidents, there's so many things along the freeway, you see. And so in spite of all the ups and downs, one just has to keep going. Just stay on the pathway. Prabhupada said, continue enthusiastically as you're doing. He ordered me to do that. So, I said, all right, it doesn't matter what may happen to me. I have to always maintain my enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. And by just obeying that instruction from Prabhupada, I have found that the nectar just keeps coming and it gets thicker and sweeter and richer and better and better and better all the time. Krishna consciousness, Brahma Saukyam Tivanantam, is ever increasingly wonderful. Devotees who have somehow lost the sweetness that they once tasted, it simply means they're not obeying their spiritual master. They've deviated from following his instructions. We have to understand the essence of Krishna consciousness is not belonging to our organization and being a well-respected member of ISKCON. We want that, naturally, but that's not the essence of it. The essence is your relationship with your spiritual master, following the instructions that he has given you with complete dedication. You see, those instructions which are coming down from Krishna to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, to Narada, to Vyas to Madhvacharya, those instructions are coming to us from Krishna through the disciplic line. So whatever order I receive from my spiritual master, I must take that order as my very life and soul. And by holding on to that order and never letting go of my spiritual master's order, then I guarantee you, you will taste sweeter and sweeter and sweeter nectar for all of eternity. But you can never let go. The disciples, they like to touch the lotus feet of their spiritual master, you see. And that may be hard because he's walking all over the world. What will you do? You hang on to his feet and let him drag you all over the world? That may be impractical. But if you can hold on to the orders you've received from your spiritual master, you see, that's how the lotus feet of the spiritual master manifest to the disciple in a form that the disciple can always hold tightly onto Guru Maharaj's lotus feet. You hold tightly under the orders he has given you. And then you will never be separated from your Guru Maharaj, you'll never be separated from Krishna, and you will find that you're becoming closer and closer to Krishna and Guru Maharaj and all the Vaishnavas. The more and more you advance in Krishna consciousness, the ability to purely love your spiritual master, the ability to purely love the Vaishnavas, the ability to purely love Krishna, that increases. You see, the happiness comes to the degree that you're able to love. Krishna consciousness is actually divine love. It's the reawakening of spiritual, pure spiritual love, which is the need, the heart, the soul is hankering for that pure spiritual love. In this material world, all the love is polluted. It's lust. Varying degrees of, you know, I'll scratch your back if you'll scratch mine. It's all polluted. Even the so-called love affairs, you see, they often end in ghastly murder scenes. Because it's based on selfishness. But one can actually surrender to the bona fide spiritual master. That is the beginning of actual love in one's life. That's why I took shelter of Prabhupada. I realized this is actual love. I have never known what love actually was, but now, by seeing how much love the followers of Prabhupada have for him, I understand what is actual love, and this is what I want. So I will surrender to Srila Prabhupada, so that I can experience what is genuine love. In this world, everyone is hankering for love, but no one is finding genuine love. But here we can find genuine love. So that is there in our guru-disciple relationship, that is there in the relationship with all the devotees. And by having a proper loving relationship with my spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, then the love with Krishna will come. You can't jump over the head of Guru and Vaishnavas and go to Krishna. He wants to see how much you love your spiritual master and how much you love the Vaishnavas. That he wants to see. If we focus on serving Guru and Vaishnavas with love, then our Krishna bhakti will automatically awaken. So the key is you have to always try to love your spiritual master. You have to always try to love the devotees. And if you do that, you'll find that your loving feelings for your spiritual master, the ability to love him purely will just get better and better, and the ability to love purely the Vaishnavas will get better and better and better. And the nectar you will taste, it will be proportionate to the degree of how much you're able to actually purely give love to your spiritual master and to the devotees. You see? So if you're always increasing the quality of your loving service to your spiritual master, you're always increasing the quality of your loving service to the devotees, then you will never lose the enthusiasm, the joy, the nectar that you experience in Krishna consciousness. Indeed, it will go on increasing exponentially. So any other questions?
How do you know that Krishna consciousness is the real path? You know, because there are so many ways. You know, like nowadays there are so many societies and so many groups. And so, how can you be sure that this is the way to?
How can we be sure that Krishna consciousness is the path? There's so many people saying there's so many paths. Well, how many truths are there? How many absolute truths are there? Absolute truth must be one. Just like how many Supreme Courts are there? It can only be one, otherwise it's not the Supreme Court. So the absolute truth is one. There cannot be two absolute truths. In the process of realizing that absolute truth, that is also one. That is based on love. Now, many people will try to realize the absolute truth by trying to gate crash their way into the spiritual world by, you know, brute strength through technology. But that system doesn't work. That's the pathway of the jnanis. Through scientific technology, through mental speculation, we realize that truth. That system doesn't work. You cannot gate crash your way into the spiritual world. Just like if you want to come to America, can you just come in by brute force? No. They're too powerful. They won't let you do that. You have to have visa. You see, you have to have visa to come to this country. You can't just say, I'm here, and you have to let me in. Get out of the way, I'm coming in. No way. They won't let you in. So there's one way to get into this country, and if you come in illegally, sooner or later they'll get you out of here. They're after you. You won't be happy here. You can't really be a peaceful, happy person. You come and try to enter illegally. Sooner or later they'll snag you, and you'll be out. So there's one way to come, and that's legally. So in the same way, if you want to qualify yourself to realize that absolute truth, then you have to. It's based on loving relationship with that Supreme Person. Now, whether you call him Krishna or Allah, we don't say you have to call him Krishna. People think sometimes that Krishna consciousness is something sectarian, but that's wrong. Krishna consciousness is the essence of truth. The essence of pure truth is Krishna consciousness. We are not presenting another pathway. People tell me, what religion do you belong to? They ask me, what religion do you belong to? And I say, there's no such thing as religions. This is a misconception. God has given religion, period, with a capital R. Man has invented so many religions with a small r. Religion is one, to love God. So Krishna consciousness is not another one of the paths. It is the essence of all the paths. It is the finest essence of all the pathways. You see. I was one time in Toronto at a grocery store. One young girl said, are you a Muslim? I said, I'm a perfect Muslim. Krishna consciousness is the essence of every path. You see. When a Muslim becomes a perfect Muslim, that is Krishna consciousness. When a Christian becomes a perfect Christian, that is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not another one of the paths. It is the essence of all the paths. When you become a perfect Buddhist, that is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the perfection of spiritual enlightenment. It is not a sectarian pathway. I have a Baptist minister who takes lessons from me on how to be a better Christian preacher. He studies Prabhupada's books, understanding this is the highest knowledge in the universe. It's higher level than the Bible. And he incorporates Prabhupada's teachings into his Christian sermon so he can elevate the consciousness of his congregation. This is not another sect, another one of the religions in the phone book. This is the essence of all of it. Actually, Lord Jesus Christ was a Vaishnava. Even Muhammad, Hazrat Muhammad, was actually a Vaishnava. Prabhupada says they are both Shaktivesh avatars. Of course, their followers are far from the standard of their original founders. That's the problem. The original founders of all the great religious systems were actually of one mind. If you take a person who's become perfect in worshipping Allah, and a person who is perfect in worshipping Krishna, they will be in a state of complete harmony and agreement with one another. There'll be no disagreement between them. Someone who has become perfect and realized, who's become perfect in following Christ, perfect in following Buddha, who see perfection in any one of these pathways, they will have no disagreement with each other. None. Because they will see there is only one path to awaken one's dormant love for God. Whether you call him Krishna, Allah, Buddha, Jehovah, it doesn't matter. So these other so-called pathways are caught up in so many illusory understandings. They don't even understand what the absolute truth is. What to speak of, how to realize it. They're not really genuine pathways. They're going into the darkness. They don't realize. They say only you can only chant the name of Jesus, otherwise you're going to hell. But Jesus never taught them. He introduced all these bogus concepts. Christ actually began his Christian movement because he wanted to put a stop to all this animal slaughter in the temples. And now these Christians are running huge slaughterhouses everywhere. You see? The Bible says, thou shalt not kill. So, if they want to eat meat, then let the animals die naturally. Why are they killing the animals? Why are they murdering? You see, that is not following the Bible. If everyone would just strictly follow the founders of their religion, we'd be very happy. The world would be a different place. But they have deviated. The Bible says, thou shalt not kill, and they're open. They have slaughterhouses everywhere, killing millions of animals every day. You see? Even though their book says, thou shalt not kill. So, let everyone follow the original founder of their pathway. Then there will be no problem. Everything will be perfectly harmonious. But they don't. They cheat. They twist the original teachings to suit their own sense gratification. I don't care what you're following. You have to give up sense gratification. No matter what you're doing, you have to give up material sense gratification and become a pure lover of God. That's the essence of self-realization. We have no objection to anyone doing that as a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, or whatever. Let them do it in their own way. We have no objection. But they're not doing that. They're becoming more and more engrossed in material sense gratification with no actual love of God awakening. So if anyone wants to learn the art of how to actually awaken pure love for God, we will teach them how to do that. They don't have to become a Hare Krishna devotee. That if they want to remain as a Christian, that's all right. A Muslim, that's all right. We have no objection. But let them learn how to give up material sense gratification, become a pure lover of God. Whatever name they want to choose, Allah, Christ, Jehovah, Buddha, Rama, we have no objection. But let them give up material sense gratification and become a pure lover of God. That is the one universal religion for the whole world. And that is Krishna consciousness. And if they think it's sectarian, that's all right. But it's actually not. If they think it's sectarian, they can chant in their own way. We have no objection. But this is not sectarian. Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. This is the king of knowledge, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. Real religion means to directly perceive who you are and who is the Supreme Self by realization. That's religion. You see. Any system which is not giving the practitioner direct perception of their eternal spiritual identity and of the Supreme Person, that is not actually religion. It is pseudo-religion. Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. You show me any system which will give the practitioner direct perception of his eternal spiritual identity. And that's a very good system. Even if it's called something different than Krishna consciousness. But where is that on the planet now? Outside of this Krishna consciousness movement that Prabhupada has brought, I don't see anyone who is giving the ability to directly perceive the self by realization. I don't see anyone doing that. Therefore, we're encouraging everyone, come here and learn from us. But what Prabhupada has given is the perfection. Come here and learn. We're asking everyone, every world leader, political leader, religious leader, academic leader, and all their followers, come here and we will teach you. Let the whole world come, we will teach all of you. Business, let Bill Gates come, let everyone come. Let President Bush come, you see. Let all the prime ministers, the kings, the presidents, all the university presidents, all the professors, all the scientists, and everyone else, let everyone come, and we will teach you the science of how to directly perceive the self by realization. Any other question? Yes?
I have a question. Lately I'm noticing, like when you hear like the, whether they're like Christian pastors or whether they're Catholic or Roman Catholic or whatever, I mean, a lot of stuff they're preaching, it's like literally they're reading out of Prabhupada's books. But they never give a credit to Prabhupada, or never say, because some of the things that we learn in ISKCON, I mean, you can know their talk about the way they talk about, or the way we tell in ISKCON about spiritual life. They're saying things like that, and it hits you like, wait a minute, Prabhupada says this. They have to read in Prabhupada's book. Or they're imitating ISKCON. I mean, if they preach like that in a church, would those people still go to Krishna?
Just like that Baptist minister who's reading Prabhupada's books and preaching, they will be helped. To really make it all the way, you have to have a bona fide spiritual minister. But they are making, any pastor who picked up something from Prabhupada's books and added it to his sermon, he's making progress, and those who listen to him are also making progress. But to actually see perfection, you need a bona fide spiritual master. You need to be initiated by a bona fide guru, someone who's fully realized the truth. But they are making progress. They will make progress.
Yeah, but they're using it like as a, it's a Christian thing, or like,
that's all right. That's all right. We have no objection. It's like a Baptist minister who studies my e-course. He presents it as Christianity.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So they, I mean, if they really truly followed it, whatever they were like, you know, whatever they're teaching or whatever, would they go to Krishna then? Or would they think that...
Not completely, no. Mm-hmm. And they will move towards Krishna. But to fully realize them, you have to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. You can't realize Krishna without fully surrendering to the bona fide spiritual master. But they are coming, they'll be moving closer to that point. There's many wonderful things they do preach about God. And that is beneficial for them, there's no doubt. But to actually achieve the perfection, that requires taking shelter of the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasmad gurum prapadjesha jagashu shaya uttamam. If you want to realize that supreme happiness, then you must take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master by initiation. Any priest who is eating meat, he's not a bona fide spiritual master. They have to actually come to a bona fide spiritual master to achieve perfection. Bona fide spiritual master connects you with the powerhouse. It's like this lamp has now been connected with the powerhouse. Without that connection, it's a very nice lamp, but it has no utility. But as soon as it's connected to the powerhouse, then the whole room becomes lit up. So when you actually connect with a bona fide spiritual master, you become illuminated. Your soul becomes turned on. Because Guru Maharaj will connect you with the powerhouse. You become illuminated. So bona fide guru is required. Not a priest who's eating meat, having homosex like many of them do. Catholic priests having homosex. You have to have a pure devotee guru. Someone who's strictly following Vaishnava principle. You want to become enlightened, you require a bona fide guru. Any other questions? Yes.
How do I find a bona fide guru?
Yes. Well, the easiest way to find a bona fide spiritual master is to intensely study Srila Prabhupada's books so you really know what are the qualifications. And then if you're sincere to find one, then Krishna will bring one to you. You won't even go looking for one. Prabhupada told the devotees that in New York. Actually, Hayagriva and Kirtananda, they went to India looking for a guru and they didn't find one. Actually, they actually went on the Jaladuta. Interesting, the same ship that Prabhupada had gone on, they had gone on the same boat. They went to India, they didn't find a guru, and they came back, and then the guru came to them. Krishna sent them guru because their desire to find a guru became very strong. You simply have to intensely desire to meet a bona fide spiritual master, and then Krishna will send you one. In our ISKCON movement, we have so many, and I'm one of them, we have so many bona fide spiritual masters. So you hear from all of us and see which one inspires you the most. Take advantage, many of them come to Florida, and take advantage of the spiritual masters in our movement who are purely, you know, representing Prabhupada, and see which one of them inspires you the most. And then take shelter of that spiritual master. And he will take you back to Godhead, for sure. Simply you have to have the strong desire to have a bona fide spiritual master, and Krishna will fulfill that desire. He's fulfilling every other desire you've had since time immemorial. We have so many nonsense desires, and Krishna fulfills those. Do you think if you desire a bona fide spiritual master, he won't give you one? No, Krishna will fulfill that desire. You simply have to genuinely desire that I must have a bona fide spiritual master who can pull me out of my entanglement in this material world and make me a pure devotee. I need such a person who can do that. Krishna will definitely provide you with such a person. It's not difficult for him to do that. He's all powerful. He can do anything within a minute. You simply have, from your side, have to become very determined in that consciousness. I must find a bona fide spiritual master and I must surrender to him. And Krishna will send you that person, for sure. Simply your own desire, that's all that's required. Everything else Krishna will cover from his side. You do your half of the bargain, Krishna will cover his half of the bargain. As man, what is that? Man proposes and God disposes, yes. Someone else had their hand up? Yes.
Prabhuji, it said that it's an offense to preach to a faithless person, but
it's an offense to
preach the holy name.
Faithless, yes. That's right.
But if that person happens to be a close family member and we're trying to get him or her into Krishna consciousness, is it okay for us to have a hope that Krishna will probably change their heart and go on preaching?
Yes. The real meaning of that, here's the proper understanding of that. We do have a rule, and one of the 10 offenses against chanting the holy name is to preach to the faithless person. So one has to understand what that actually means. Actually, in this material world, everybody is faithless to a certain extent. And everyone has some degree of faith also. Everyone has a mixture of faith and faithlessness. So what that really means is that you have to preach in such a way that you don't stimulate their faithless side. If you can preach to someone in such a way that you stimulate their faithful side, then you have full facility, you have full carte blanche, as they say, full authority or adhikar to preach to that person. So the more you become expert in Krishna consciousness, the more you can preach to anybody and everybody. You can judge very easily. If you preach to somebody and they start becoming offensive, you know that you've stepped over the line. But if you can preach to someone and actually attract them to what you're saying, then you're not committing that offense. It's only if you preach in such a way they become agitated and they start blaspheming Krishna, then you know you made a mistake. But actually, you know, Prabhupada sent us out on the street with his books to approach everyone with his books. So Prabhupada actually wants us to preach to everybody. Lord Chaitanya said, whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. Yare deka tarika Krishna upadesha mara agaya guru hoyutada idesh. His order is, whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you become a guru and deliver the people of this country. So you should preach to everyone, but you should preach in such a way that they don't become offensive. That's all. So one has to become expert how to. It's like a surgeon; he can very expertly cut away the cancer. So we have to become very, very expert in preaching Krishna consciousness. How to tailor fit the presentation to this particular person so that they appreciate it very much. Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, it's so attractive that if you sincerely, humbly try to tailor fit your presentation to that particular individual, Krishna will help you how to do that. Krishna is in your heart and he's in the heart of the person you're preaching to. So if you really try hard to represent him in a way that's pure and wonderful, he will guide you how to do that so you can preach to everybody and never commit that again.
But sometimes people get angry. You know, they don't want to hear about Krishna.
Well, then you have, that means there's something wrong with the way you're presenting it. You're coming on like a born-again Christian, maybe, you know. Hitting him on the head with the Bhagavad Gita. You see, you should study the way Prabhupada preaches. You know, you read those conversations. There's some, like in the Science of Self-Realization book, there's so many nice conversations. See how Prabhupada preaches and to different types of people. You have to study Prabhupada's preaching technique. You know, Prabhupada's the master preacher. He's the perfect teacher. Study Prabhupada's techniques and you'll learn all kinds. I mean, Prabhupada is amazing. I'll give you an example. He was preaching in Detroit to a black man, Negro man. This man was a big politician. He was, you know, one of the, in the state legislature, one of the, in the House of Representatives, a big politician in Michigan. So you know what Prabhupada told him? He said, yes, Hare Krishna, he is from your community. Yeah. Krishna is black, you see. So yes, we're worshipping our God is from your community, the Negro community. So this way Prabhupada was charming him and making him so happy. So you have to be very intelligent how you preach. But I really push this preaching mantra forward, because who would object? Who would object? We simply, if we can know who we are and be who we are, then we can actually achieve the true happiness in life. Who would object to knowing who they are and being who they are? My dear sir, would you like to know who you are and learn how to be who you are? Somebody said, no, I don't want to know. They say, oh, fine, well then remain in ignorance. Somebody said that they wanted to be a dog in their next life. Prabhupada said, I bless you, you become a dog. That was his response. If somebody is so attached to ignorance, they say, yes, I'd like to be, just want to be a dog forever. And Prabhupada said, yes, I bless you, you become a dog. So study how Prabhupada preaches, and then you get all good. And also many, those who are very expert, you know, other expert preachers are there too. So many senior devotees in our movement who are very, very expert at preaching. You should study their techniques, how they answer questions, how they conduct themselves. And you should study their style and see what you can learn. You develop your own. Everyone can develop their own preaching style. You see, you have your own personality, your own way of feeling, acting, speaking. You don't have to be someone else. Be who you are for Krishna. Learn how to with your own personality, your own style, your own nature, how to make Krishna consciousness attractive to your listeners. If you strive diligently to do that, Krishna has been waiting for millions of lifetimes that you will take this up. And now that you do it, do you think he will not help you? Krishna will give you all help, but now she wants to represent me purely and attract the whole world to me. Very good. Let me give her all intelligence how to do this. You see.
One thing comes to my mind. Sneakingly give them prasadam.
Yes, that is one technique. That is a very good technique. Actually, sometimes you have to lie to them also. There was one businessman, a travel agency owner, and I was giving him some prasadam. Now, he was an Indian, but he was a Christian. So I came to bring him the prasadam, and he said, "Is this prasadam?" I said, "No." He said, "All right, took it." Sometimes we have to use that, you know, be very intelligent. I had to lie to him and tell him it wasn't prasadam to get him to take it. And he took it and he got purified. So you have to be very clever sometimes in preaching work. You may have to sometimes tell him it's not prasadam. Don't worry, I didn't offer to Krishna. This is just cookies. So you have to be in, if you're very, if you, see this is beyond mundane morality. This is mercy. We're trying to save these people. Do whatever, it's not based on exploitation. Then lying would be very immoral and you get bad karmic reaction. But if you're in the mood of helping people and serving them, even if you have to sometimes say it's not prasadam, then you're doing the highest good for that person. By finding a way to give them the mercy, even though they're doing everything they can to not take the mercy, you're finding a way to bestow Lord Chaitanya's mercy on that person. So one should be very, very aggressive. Prabhupada said, actually there was one female disciple, she said, "Prabhupada, you know, women are supposed to be very humble and chaste and shy, but, you know, you're asking us to go out and sell the books, so, you know, you have to be aggressive to do that." And Prabhupada was saying, he was saying you should be aggressive. Set a lion in the chase and a lamb at home. So he said, "I was not invited to come to America to preach. I came here as an aggressor." So one should be actually very aggressive, thinking, how can I give people this love and this kindness even though they don't want it? How can I find a way to bestow this mercy on the people so that they can actually become free from their suffering? I have the medicine which will save the whole world from birth and death, and they don't want to take it. They're suffering in illusion. I have the medicine which can cure the problems of the whole world, but they don't want it. So somehow I have to induce them to take it. Somehow or other, I have to find a way to induce them to take this medicine even though they don't want it, so they will become saved. Questions, Maura? Yes.
Do we need a living guru to realize Krishna?
Reading
books, Prabhupada's books and
yeah. Question is, do we actually need a living guru, one who is physically present on this plane? Actually, there was a lady who asked Prabhupada this question in London. "Swamiji, can't we just read the books? Isn't that enough?" Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "Guru, don't make a guru in the air." He said, "Make a guru concrete." Of course, the system is, there are three things we need: guru, sadhu, and shastra. So Prabhupada is that powerful acharya that we all take shelter of, there's no doubt. And we do get a direct connection with the greatest spiritual master in the history of the universe when we contact Prabhupada's books, there's no doubt. But we have to read in Prabhupada's books exactly what he's telling us to do. Some people will say that they call it Ritvik philosophy, that, you know, only Prabhupada is a guru and no one else. I will just take Prabhupada as my guru and no one else, because, you know, he's so great and the others may not be so great, I gotta be careful. I only want Prabhupada as my guru. Because, you know, so many gurus had difficulty and they went away, so I'm a little afraid to trust anyone now. But we have to actually see what Prabhupada is saying in his books. We have to see directly what he's saying. He says, many, many things which indicate we do need a living guru. Approach the spiritual master, inquire from him. You see? When Prabhupada was here, we could inquire from him. We could get answers. Like, you could be on a morning walk, you could ask him a question, you could raise your hand in the class and ask him a question, you could write him a letter and ask a question. But we are not on a spiritual level. We can, for a departed acharya, we can ask him a question. And, you know, and surely and know that we're getting an answer. It could be our mental speculation. Only a liberated soul could do that. So since we're not liberated souls, we need to actually follow the instructions that Prabhupada has given us. And that is, you have to have a spiritual master that you can inquire from. One who can see what you're doing and saying, this is right and this is wrong. I mean, it's very convenient to say that only Prabhupada is my guru. Then I'm really just avoiding surrendering is what I'm really doing. Because then my mind is my guru. Well, I think Prabhupada wants me to do this, and I think Prabhupada wants me to do that. What you're really doing is you're just accepting your mind as guru. You actually need a living guru who can see. So such and such das, you know, what you're doing is wrong. Stop doing that way. Your attitude is wrong. You must have this kind of attitude. You see, Prabhupada trained us. We were trained when he was physically on this planet how to have the proper attitude, the proper speech, the proper behavior. You can't just get that by reading books. You need hands-on training. Just like you can't become a medical doctor by just reading the medical books. You have to go to the medical college. You have to have a professor who can show you. You can actually show you how to take the scalpel in your hand and cut open a human body without killing the person. You need that hands-on training. That's very important. So Prabhupada is our authority. But he gave us, when he was physically present, those of us who had the great fortune to be with him, we got hands-on training. You see, so that you can't we all require that hands-on training. So you need that. You need to have someone who is in the line of Prabhupada, who has that realization, who can give you the hands-on training. And Prabhupada wants that. The Rithvic philosophers say that, you know, only Prabhupada is a guru and no one else, but Prabhupada directly states in the Bhagavatam purport, the one who is now the disciple is the next spiritual master. Prabhupada personally encouraged me to become a spiritual master. Personally. So, this is a service that we are doing on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. Because he wants us to do this. And he said that those who come to the movement after his departure, they would become the disciples of his disciples. Directly stated that in 1977 in Vrindavan. So, if we accept Prabhupada as our guru, that's very good. He is our guru. So let's follow his instructions. If we actually accept Prabhupada as our guru, and we must. He's the greatest acharya in the history of the universe. We all must accept Prabhupada as our guru, and he's our authority. So let's see what he's telling us to do. He's telling us to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, which is him, a siksha guru, and also a living spiritual master, as a diksha guru. He made it very clear. So yes, if we accept Prabhupada as our guru, we all must do that. Then let's do what he said. Not what my mind says, but what did Prabhupada say? That we must do. So who is the best authority on knowing what Prabhupada wants us to do? That is the people who were trained by Prabhupada when he was here. Who were with him, who were corrected by him, who were encouraged by him, who received direct personal instructions from him again and again and again and again. Who Prabhupada trained them how to get perfectly on the track of Krishna consciousness. Those are the persons we need to take shelter of and take help from. So surrendering to Prabhupada means surrendering to his representative also. Even when he was here. You know what he told me? He said, do whatever the temple president tells you without questioning if it's right or wrong. He ordered me to follow his representative with perfect obedience. That's what Prabhupada instructed. So now if someone thinks, well, I'll just serve Prabhupada, I won't listen to any of his representatives. Is that pleasing Prabhupada? No way. He ordered me to not only obey him, but to obey his representatives without question. That's what he trained me to do. So you think it's different now that he's gone? We only listen to him and we don't listen to his representative? No. Just as Prabhupada ordered me to obey his representatives, so I'm giving the same instruction to you. Prabhupada wants you to follow his instructions and obey his representatives. You see? He wants you to obey his representatives. That's how he trained me. Is it different? No. He trained me to follow him and his representatives both. So you must also do the same thing. So he said that his disciples would become acharyas. They'd become spiritual masters after his departure. He said actually they already are. But as a matter of formality, they do not initiate disciples in my presence. But after my departure, then they perform them. The Rithvic philosophers say that only Prabhupada is the guru. He's only the only acharya, no one else. But you know what Prabhupada told us in Mayapur? This is a big, during the Mayapur festival, when all the devotees had come. It's a big, wonderful festival. And it was, you can hear this. You can hear the recording. Yeah, and you can read the transcript. Prabhupada was saying that now we have 10,000. He said, and then we will grow to 100,000. And then we will grow to 1,000,000. And then we will grow to 10,000,000. There will be no scarcity of acharyas. So Prabhupada's vision was 10,000,000 ISKCON acharyas, not just one. Of course, founder acharya, there is only one. Prabhupada's vision of ISKCON is one founder acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and 10,000,000 acharyas. You see? So, we have to approach, Prabhupada says again and again, we have to approach the acharya. So we should approach Prabhupada in the form of his books, and we should also approach him in the form of his representatives, those who are purely following him. That's how we're also approaching Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is manifesting in the form of those disciples of his who are strictly following him. That is also Prabhupada. He's manifest in the form of them, his representatives. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Next question. Yes.
I have a friend who was very instrumental in bringing me and my wife to ISKCON.
Mm-hmm.
He had a guru, Bhakti Tirtha Swami,
mm-hmm.
and even before he left his body, he jumped camp to Narayan Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any shame in this? Or am I getting angry?
According to Vaishnava etiquette, it is sinful. This, like divorce, is not allowed in Vedic culture. When you make a commitment between man and woman, that is sinful to break that commitment. To break a relationship with one's spiritual master, to give up one's guru and take another one, that is considered sinful.
That's considered what?
Sinful.
Sinful. Guru is an eternal relationship. If one gives up one's spiritual master, that is the greatest, that is called guru aparad. It is the greatest offense one can commit. If the guru is bona fide, now if the guru is bogus, just like I was initiated by one popular yogi who was teaching a meditation technique. So I gave him up because he was not bona fide guru. But if the guru is bona fide, like Bhakti Tirtha Swami is a bona fide spiritual master, to give up a bona fide spiritual master, that is like slapping Krishna in the face. Krishna says, I know no one but my devotees. My devotees know no one but me, and I know no one but my devotees. So to give up a bona fide spiritual master is just like spitting in Krishna's face. It's the most offensive thing you can ever do.
And he's so intelligent, I just can't imagine how he isn't seeing that.
Well, there is intelligence and there is also, you know, foolishness, a combination. Everyone has an intelligent nature and a foolish nature. So sometimes the foolish nature overpowers the intelligent nature in us. So we have to learn how to strengthen our intelligence. Krishna consciousness is called buddhi yoga, the yoga of the intelligence. So we have to learn how to become very strong in our intelligence. And the easy way to do that is read Prabhupada's books a lot. Read Prabhupada's books as much as possible. And then you'll have very good intelligence. You'll never be misled by anyone. If you keep your nose in Prabhupada's books, constantly reading Prabhupada's books and understanding what does Prabhupada want me to do, if you keep focusing like that, then you'll never be carried away by the power of the illusory energy. If someone makes foolish mistake, it just means they're not reading Prabhupada's books enough. That's the problem. They're not reading his books enough. Questions more?
Does guru find disciple or disciple finds guru?
What is it?
Does guru find disciple or disciple finds guru?
Does the guru find disciple or disciple find guru? Actually, whether I find my disciple or my disciple finds me, it really doesn't matter as long as we come together and we stay together. Either way, it could happen either way. It could happen either way.
So
somehow or other, Krishna brings them together. Ultimately, it's Krishna. He's the ultimate arranger of everything. Ultimately, it's Krishna bringing both of them together. On the higher perspective, it's the arrangement of Krishna. So you can't really say it's the disciple finding the guru or the guru finding the disciple. It's Krishna bringing them together. You see, when that happens, then one has to recognize, I have now found my spiritual master and I must surrender to him. Questions more? Yes.
Why some people are not believe the reincarnation? Like some people say, after we die, we go to hell or heaven. We don't have any chance to get God, you know, and we don't have any second chance. Like Christian people, they don't believe.
Why do they say that?
Yeah,
because they don't have a bona fide spiritual master.
But they read Bible, you know. Well, I have some friend. I always argue with them, and I tell them after why you eating the meat, you know. If you're eating the meat, you go to animal body and everything.
Right.
But still, they don't believe. They say, we eat the meat because of Jesus make peace and this and that.
Yeah.
Kind of answer I give them? You know?
Well, I had a similar situation. I was preaching at the University of Oklahoma. And I was asked to speak in one class called, there was a course called On Death and Dying. And there was some evangelical Christians in the audience, and they were arguing that, you know, you just have one chance and that's it. You either go to heaven or hell. So I said this. I said, at this university, if you fail a course, the university will let you take it over again. They won't just kick you out of the university if you fail the course. So I said, do you think the University of Oklahoma is more merciful than God? And they couldn't say anything. I mean, this is ridiculous. It shows a complete lack of intelligence. A mundane institution would be more merciful than such a God. You get one chance and that's it. If you fail this course, we're going to throw you in a pit of fire forever. I mean, this is absolutely insane. As far as Jesus eating meat, he may have taken fish in the desert. Even according to Vaishnava philosophy, if you're in an emergency situation, you can eat meat if you have to survive. We are not impractical. If you're in an emergency situation, you can eat anything to survive. I don't care what it is. But if you have a situation where there's, you know, the Publix grocery store is full of all varieties of fruits and vegetables and grains, and the Indian stores are there with so many rice and dal, and why do you have to eat meat?
But, you know, they don't know how to eat vegetable, you know, so they...
Well, give them we have cookbooks, you give them...
But they never taste, like some people, they never...
You invite them over to your house for dinner, let them taste bishadam.
But sometimes, they always argue with me, you know, they say... We used to eat this our food, you know. This is your food, so this is our food. And so
One argument commonly given is that plants also have life.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? I mean,
you're killing
a plant.
And actually, that's a fact. Prabhupada told, I was with Prabhupada in Atlanta in 1975, and he said, whether you kill a rich man or a poor man, you're still guilty of murder. You see? So whether you kill a plant or an animal, you're still a murderer. So many people, vegetarian people, are very proud. Yes, I am vegetarian, but actually they are sinful rascals because they're not offering those vegetables to Krishna. They are, in one sense, murderers just like the meat eaters are murderers. They're killing so many potatoes and carrots. Those are also living entities. You can put a potato in a glass of water and it'll start growing. It's life. It's a living entity inside there. So if you just cut that potato up and throw them in the frying pan, you don't, then you're getting a reaction. You have to become a potato in your next lifetime. Or kill that sin, or in a future life, you're killing that potato. So, what's the difference? The difference is Krishna has prescribed. You see, patram pushpam palam tayam yo mai bhakta priyachati. If you offer me a love and, with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Where does Krishna say meat? Krishna has told us that devotees of the Lord, yagyashishta shana shanto muchante sarvakil bishai, the devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which has been offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment barely eat only sin. So the key is you have to offer everything that you eat to Krishna. And then there is no sin, but you have to offer Krishna what is acceptable. You cannot offer him, he will not accept it, which is not acceptable. He will take fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and grains. He will not touch meat, he will not touch fish, and he will not touch eggs. So, the real thing is we're not really vegetarians, we are Krishnatarians. We are the people who only eat the remnants of that which has been offered to Krishna. If Krishna decides to become a meat eater, we have no problem with eating meat. If Krishna decides that he will now accept McDonald's hamburgers as part of his diet, then we will offer McDonald's hamburgers to Krishna and we will eat McDonald's hamburgers. That's a horrible thought, isn't it? Krishna will never do that, don't worry. He will never do that. He loves the cows. He is a great lover of the cows. So, that is the real thing is we are not vegetarian or this or that tarian. We are simply Krishnatarian, that's all. We will eat whatever Krishna takes, and he happens to be a vegetarian, so therefore we are vegetarian because Krishna is a vegetarian. Yes.
If you're in a situation where every meal cannot be offered, is this acceptable?
In a situation where
every meal cannot be offered. Where every meal you take cannot be offered.
Well, is it all vegetarian?
Well, for the most part. I'm just saying if you're in a situation that you have no control over and you're doing the best.
For example?
Well, let's just say that you're in a hospital situation.
Yeah.
And you're served certain foods.
But you can, in a hospital, I have many devotees go to the hospital and they say, I'm vegetarian, I don't take anything but vegetarian food, and the hospital has to provide that.
Well, this isn't exactly that situation I just used.
Or some, even in jail sometimes.
Yeah. but I guess what I'm asking is,
uh-huh.
If you are just taking vegetarian-type foods, but you're not in a situation where you offer this at every meal, is this acceptable?
Well, if you're in a situation... Let's say you're, you know, a corporate executive or something, and they have their big dinners, you know, and you're sitting there, and you just take some salad and a baked potato, and you just mentally offer it.
Okay, that's what I was trying to find out.
I know one devotee, at the time he was working for Conoco Oil Company, he was one of their big geologists, you know, and they have the big, you know, he would just take the baked potato and the salad and offer it to Krishna in his mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, that can be done. Because Krishna is in your heart also.
Okay.
Even if you're not at home, you don't have your altar handy, Krishna is also in your heart, so you just mentally offer to Krishna.
Okay.
Actually, that used to be a thing that everybody would pray before they would eat. They would bow their head in prayer, but now, you know, hardly anyone does. When I was a boy, we were traveling across the U.S. with my Christian family. I grew up in a Christian family, so we would pray. We were sitting at a rest stop. We all bowed our heads in prayer, and some Catholic nuns came up and said, "Oh, this is so wonderful. You're praying before you eat." So, you know, even a good Christian will bow their head in prayer. So you could actually bow your head in prayer before you say, "My dear Lord Krishna, please accept this offering. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare." And then take the meal. Then they go, "Oh, she's a pious Christian. Wow, she must really love Jesus. She just prayed before she ate."
Well, I didn't know that, and that's good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and this way you should always offer everything. Devotees' motto is only Krishna conscious coming out and only prasadam going in. The mouth is Krishna out and Krishna in. Always talking about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, and always putting Krishna prasadam in the mouth. Nothing else. If it's not prasadam, it stays out. It doesn't come in the mouth. That's the devotee's mood. And that makes him very, very dear to Krishna. You see, when you become dear to that person who owns and controls everything, do you think you will have any problems anymore in this world? No. You won't have any more problems. When you become very, very dear to that person who owns and controls everything, you've got it made. You've absolutely got it made. You won't have any problems anymore. Krishna owns and controls everything. So you become very dear to him, just like you're working for a big corporation. You know, you're struggling in all the office politics. But if your best friend happens to be the owner of the corporation, the owner of the company, I mean to say, then you have no problem. The office politics can't touch you. Your best friend owns the company. Nobody can touch you. You're covered. You see? So if you will become very sincere about only taking Krishna prasadam, then you'll become very, very, very dear to that person who owns and controls everything, and you will have no more problems in your life. Your life will become anxiety less. Guaranteed. Questions more?
One more question. It's what Prabhupada was saying. It's like you were saying that Prabhupada's books are not just enough. You have to also have a group that you can approach.
Yes, Prabhupada said that.
If you have
accepting prayer. Prabhupada means accepting his instructions. Mm-hmm. And accepting his instructions mean to accept a living spiritual master. That's right.
Let's say you have a guru.
Okay.
But your guru has fallen. What do you do in that situation?
Yes, then you have to follow Prabhupada's books, which say that you can reject a fallen guru.
So we cannot, again, take initiation from someone else, or can we...
One can take reinitiation. I mean, is it... See, Prabhupada's books answer all these questions. There's no confusion. For anyone who fully takes shelter of Prabhupada's books, there's no confusion. Prabhupada gives the example of Bali Maharaj. He was a disciple of Shukracharya. And Shukracharya actually fell down from being a proper guru, and so Bali Maharaj rejected him. And he, by doing that, he became very dear to the Lord. So one can, of course, in the case in our society, if one is initiated disciple into our movement, then you are connected with Prabhupada. If you take an initiation within ISKCON from one of the ISKCON spiritual masters, then even if that spiritual master has difficulty, your connection with Prabhupada was formally established by that diksha.
So there's no need for...
There's some committee now that's studying this issue to come up with an official, you know, report what they've concluded. I'm asked this question from time to time. One should definitely always take shelter of senior devotees. That's called siksha guru. One should always do that. Even if I have a diksha guru, like my disciples, I encourage them to not only hear from me, but to also hear from other senior devotees. I don't want disciples that only hear from me, and everybody else, they consider everyone else to be a jerk. You see, I don't, those kind of disciples are a headache for me. I want disciples who not only can hear, respect, and love me as their spiritual master, but also can hear, love, and respect from other devotees too. So there's no question of that I only hear and, you know, be inspired by one person. We have a whole movement full of senior advanced devotees. So we automatically expect all of our disciples to connect with Krishna through us. Their, you know, the spiritual master wants his disciples to connect through him and also to be connected through the other wonderful devotees in our movement. So even such a spiritual master is not on an ego trip that he just wants some worship. No, he just wants to see that disciple is connected. That's all. So one should be connected with not only through one's initiating guru, but through many senior devotees we have in our movement. You should be connected. You should have a whole network of ways of connecting with Krishna. So even if something happens to your spiritual master, then you're not going to just fall down. You know, you'll be protected. Now, my practical advice I do give is that if one wants to be reinitiated, you can. That can be done. But there should be no question of forcing someone to be reinitiated, because that's a matter of your own heart, your own conscience. Now, if someone says, is it required for me to be initiated or not? They're trying to resolve that issue. So I can't really give you a definitive answer for that, because there's an official committee that's going to come up with, based on scholarly research, is it absolutely required to get reinitiated? I can't definitively say one way or the other on that, but you definitely have to take shelter. If you don't get formally reinitiated, you should have other devotees that you really take shelter of. And you know, we all need to take shelter of Vaishnava Association, Senior Association especially. We all need that. We vitally require that. So whether you formally take the ceremony or not, you have to have other senior devotees you do take shelter of. That's required. That's always a requirement. The Prabhupada tells us that one should welcome the association of devotees who are more advanced than you. You should serve them and take instruction and training from them. So that, whether my guru had difficulty or not, that always remains. All senior devotees who are more advanced than us, we should always take shelter from. Now, if by taking shelter of one spiritual master somehow fell by the wayside, and you're taking shelter of others, and you're feeling a very, very strong connection with Krishna through one particular, you know, spiritual master, then I would recommend that you do get reinitiated. If you find one person that you can repose full faith in, you feel strongly connected, strongly protected, strongly directed by that person, I do recommend you get reinitiated by that person. Questions, Mark? Yes.
You were talking about like other religions, like Christianity and Islam. They could also attain love of God, but they don't have a clear understanding of who God is.
Right.
So how can they really perfect their...
They need to read Prabhupada's books. The day when all the Christian preachers and all the Muslim clerics read Prabhupada's books, that's the day there'll be peace on this planet. They can remain Muslim and Christian, but they must all study Prabhupada's books. You see, that's what's required. That's why Prabhupada emphasizes Shivat book. These books will revolutionize the world. Prabhupada's books. You see, when people feel this connection with Prabhupada, this respect for Prabhupada, then the whole world will become like heaven, like Vaikuntha. Better than heaven, Vaikuntha.
An offense to
Muslims, they think it's an offense.
Yes, they do. But some don't. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you get, we have posted, and we have you. It's now been just posted today on the internet. I went preaching in the Muslim world last year, and we had very wonderful success engaging the Muslim people in chanting Hare Krishna. Whole hall full of Muslims, people are chanting Hare Krishna. Anybody wants that link? I don't have it, but I can give it to you later. I have the URL. You can actually go and see where I'm engaging a whole hall full of Muslim people in chanting Hare Krishna. It just was posted this afternoon on the internet. But it's out there. You can watch. It's a half-hour TV show posted on the internet in two segments. But the fact is that the Muslim people, if they're approached in the right circumstance, and they're in the right frame of mind, they will also take to this Krishna consciousness. Well, I have a whole hall full of Muslim people. We engage them in kirtan, and then after the kirtan, they rush the book table. We sold out every Bhagavad Gita in 5 minutes. The book table was emptied out. So you can't tell me that, you know. I mean, I'm seeing that everyone can take to Krishna consciousness. This is the universal science of the soul. Questions, Marv? Everyone is satisfied now? All questions answered? Everyone's heart is dancing in ecstasy now. Yes?
In situations like, you know, we have religions or philosophies which are impersonal or opposite to what we believe. So in that situation... Situations in which...
I'm half deaf, so, you know, speak up.
Situations in which the philosophies are opposite to what we believe.
Okay.
How would, reading Prabhupada's book, which are opposite to their belief, help them?
Well, actually, deep within, everyone knows this is the truth. If one goes deep enough within one's heart, one will come to this conclusion. Yes, Krishna is God. They are just, their pure knowledge right now is simply covered by the three modes of nature. Just by contacting the holy name, contacting Pashadam, even just by appreciating your saintly qualities, you see, that helps to purify them. So every devotee should behave in a wonderful saintly way. Every Vaishnava and Vaishnavi should conduct themselves in such a wonderful, sweet way that everyone loves you wherever you go. Because by their loving you, they will make advancement. They become purified. The more they love you and respect you, the more they make advancement automatically, just by appreciating you. You be a very good devotee, chant your rounds, follow the principles, serve your Guru Maharaj faithfully, and then be a wonderful ambassador of Krishna wherever you go. Being very kind to everyone, very friendly and kind to everyone. And everyone will love you. And by loving you, they will make spiritual advancement. Even if they don't think your religion is a very wonderful thing, just by liking you as a person, they will make advancement. Love conquers all. That's a thing. How did Prabhupada convince us? If you go to downtown Tampa, you take a survey. Do you believe in God? Most people say yes. And then you ask them question number two, my dear sir. If I told you that God is a little blue cowherd boy, he plays on his flute in the full moon night of the Sharad season in the bushes on the bank of the Jamuna River, what would you say? And he would say, I'm calling the police. There's a nut out here on the street. It must have escaped from an insane asylum. So, how did Prabhupada convince us that God is a little blue cowherd boy? He blows on a flute in the full moon night of the Sharad season, lurking in the bushes on the bank of the Jamuna. How did Prabhupada convince us? You see? Because his conviction was absolute. He had absolute conviction that Krishna is God. At the same time, he had absolute compassion upon us. Papa did not hold anything back. He gave us his full love, his full kindness, his full mercy. He held nothing back. He simply came to give us his loving kindness. Actually, it was Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada was delivering to us Krishna's mercy. He didn't hold anything back. He fully gave us his Krishna's mercy in the form of his personal love for us. You see? And that convinced us. So if you want to convince them, you see how Prabhupada convinced those boys and girls at 22nd Avenue. You study Prabhupada's Lalamrita. You see how Prabhupada convinced those boys and girls that Krishna was God. And you take up that mood of Prabhupada in your own preaching. And I guarantee you, you'll be able to make thousands of disciples if you do that. You'll make a revolution in this planet if you take up that mood of Prabhupada. Guarantee. Questions more? So now everyone is 100% completely, totally satisfied? There's no more questions lurking in the heart? How about back there? Nothing? I'm not ignoring you back there.
Because I ask every question that I have could be here for weeks.
What?
She said, if I ask every question which I have, we will be here for weeks.
All right, come on in. I'm ready. I will cancel my engagements in Miami. Come on. I'll give you my email address. You can ask me on the email. Anybody who wants to join my internet course, you just go to backtohome.com. And www.backtohome, backtohome.com. And you can sign up for my free e-course, which goes out to thousands of people in over 100 countries. And I will answer your questions personally. If you have any questions, you can just email me, respond to the lessons and the daily inspirational messages, and I will answer you personally. If you have a question you're embarrassed to ask in a public forum, you'd like a private darshan, then you can do that by email, or actually even this evening we can arrange through my wife, Vishnupriya Devi Dasi, my beloved spouse here who travels all over the world with me, here in the green sari. She is my beloved traveling companion, travels with me all over the world preaching Krishna bhakti. She's the real secret of my success, is her bhakti. So you can talk to her and arrange an appointment with me. Or if I'm tied up, you can ask her also. She's very enlightened in spiritual wisdom. You can ask her also. She can answer many questions. She can answer all questions. So, anything else?
Yes. On surface, it looks very simple.
Yes, it is.
Four things. But when you go in detail, it's not as simple.
So, that was a statement. That wasn't a question. But I disagree with you. You're wrong.
Okay. How am I wrong?
Okay. Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, it's simple for the simple and it's difficult for the crooked. Sorry. Sorry. So, if we're finding it difficult, it means that we have some crooked mentality within ourselves that we have to get rid of. That's what it means. I mean, the honest truth is we all have a certain degree of crookedness within our heart. So we have to just find the ways and means to purge that crooked nature out of our hearts. And then it's very simple. The process is always simple.
But the crookedness also goes away by chanting. And when you are chanting, sometimes you are going here and there.
Yes, yes. So that's why we recommend you must chant 16 quality rounds before the sun comes up in the morning. I was speaking with one young corporate worker, on the corporate fast track, and she would get up, very nice devotee actually, one of my students in my course, and she gets up and she just maybe chants one or two rounds and just goes to work. She's chanting around here, around there during the day and finishing up late at night. I said, this is completely wrong what you're doing. You have to go to bed early as possible and get up very early, chant 16 rounds before you go to work. Sit down peacefully in the early morning hours and fully absorb yourself in the holy name. And then it's very simple and easy to be Krishna conscious. Trouble is, we don't, you know, we have to mold our schedule in such a way that we have quality early morning hours every day for the holy names and for reading. And then it's easy then. If you take advantage of the right time of the day for your sadhana, then it becomes easy to remain fixed throughout the entire day. But if you just get up and run to work, well, I'll get some rounds done here, you know, my lunch break, I'll chant a few more rounds, and here I'll chant some. And it's very difficult then to be Krishna conscious. I haven't talked to you about your schedule, but, you know. But I know that some people have a problem because they just don't discipline themselves. They haven't set up their daily schedule properly. They don't give the sadhana the importance that it should be getting in their daily schedule. They just, you know, it's like my mundane activities are more important, and I squeeze Krishna in wherever I can around my mundane activities. They've got it backwards.
Recognizing that we give priority to all material activities.
Yeah. We're giving priority to our material activities, and Krishna has to fit in wherever he can around them. It should be the other way around. You got to just reverse your priorities. When you're cooking a feast, what goes on the front burner and what goes on the back burner? When you're cooking rice and you're frying pakoras, you put the rice on the front burner and the pakoras on the back burner? No, because the rice doesn't need so much attention. You can put the rice on the back burner and you put the pakoras on the front burner. So, Krishna consciousness is the pakoras. It requires more focus and more attention. Your material activities, that's the rice. You should get your material activities so well organized, so well structured and in place that they're going on virtually on automatic pilot. And then you can put your primary focus, your love and your bhakti into Krishna consciousness. Just like in India, I don't know, you ladies probably can't do, but in Indian villages they can the clay pots on the head. If you try to do that, you may just drop it.
You can do that?
Oh, very good. Very good. But how many of you Indian ladies can chit-chat about, you know, your kids and the latest things happening in the neighborhood while you have a clay pot on your head, not even thinking about the clay pot? You see? In the Indian villages, I see the clay pot sitting there, and they don't even think about it, just chatting with their friends. And meanwhile, there's a big two clay pots on their head full of water. It's like it's not even there, you see. So, you should have your Krishna consciousness so well in place that it's, you know, you can do all varieties of activities and your Krishna consciousness always remains there. If you become fixed, solidly fixed in Krishna consciousness, you will be able to see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. When you go to your job, you will see how Krishna is there within every square inch of that building. You'll see that this, when you pull up in your car to your office, you will see how the building is the energy of Krishna. And you're walking into the energy of Krishna when you enter your office. You see, this is called spiritual vision. You can see everything in relation to Krishna. This is how Prabhupada trained me. The very first time I met Prabhupada, you know what he told us? He said, you have all seen God. Because Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and I am the light of the moon. He said, you are drinking water once, twice, thrice, more than that, every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water. then immediately you become Krishna conscious. He said to become Krishna conscious. It's not a difficult job. It simply requires practice. So Prabhupada told us. It's like now we are seeing the light of the sun is coming through the window. And even the electrical light, it is sun energy transformed. All the light power everywhere, it is all sun energy, directly or indirectly. So that illuminating power, that is Krishna. So when you're sitting in your office, is it dark there or is it lit up? It's lit up. So you're seeing Krishna everywhere. He's the light which is illuminating your office. And do you have a supervisor?
Sort of.
Sort of? Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. So when you see your supervisor, or even, actually, it doesn't, it could be, you have people working under you. Huh? All right. So when you see the people working under you, you can see, oh, actually, they're doing, they have, you can see the talents and the abilities they have to perform their job nicely under your direction. You can see, Krishna says, I am the ability in man. You can say, oh, Krishna. I can see Krishna because I see how they are capable in doing their work here at this office. That is Krishna. So in this way, you have to develop Krishna vision. Krishna is everywhere. There is nowhere there is not Krishna. The only problem is we are covered by lust, by anger, and by greed. That's why it's difficult, because the lust, the anger, and the greed is polluting us right now.
Can you see Krishna among other people?
Huh?
I have seen an energy of Krishna working, but my question, maybe I don't know if it's correct or not. So you say you should see Krishna in everyone.
Yes.
So how would you explain that? See Krishna in everyone.
So how do you see Krishna within everyone? Well, I just explained that Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. So everyone has some kind of ability. Even the cat is very, very cunning at doing things. Every type of capability and expertise is a manifestation of Krishna.
So, like, my profession is like that. Many times patients come, they're very angry, and they may be angry on someone else, but
you have to analyze them. You're a psychiatrist, so you have to psychoanalyze people, you see. So it's a very simple thing. Your guiding principle for psychoanalyzing everyone should be the Bhagavad Gita. You wouldn't be able to keep your job if you started, you know, giving pure Bhagavad Gita lectures to all your patients. But what you really have to do is you have to take the wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita, you have to translate it into terms that are acceptable by modern day psychiatry, and give them Bhagavad Gita philosophy in a language which they find acceptable and your hiring authority finds acceptable. And then you'll be the most successful psychiatrist in the world.
Nowadays, I'm seeing most people say I'm atheist.
Atheist. So, if someone says I'm atheist, you can say. Huh? So, what's the question?
Sometimes, you know, it's hard in my profession to talk about religion.
No, you don't have to say religion.
No,
don't even say religion.
Spirituality or something.
No, you don't have to say spirituality. You have to learn how to. Maybe we should have some. You know, some one-on-one sessions where I give you all kinds of ideas, but you can talk in other terms. I mean, Prabhupada in so many ways describes the Supreme, the complete whole, for example, in the Sri Upanishad. You can explain the highest truth in that terminology, the complete whole, or the source. That's a very good way to do it. You can say even the atheistic scientists are looking for the source. They want to know, what is the origin of the universe? You can talk about the origin. You can say we are all, everything is coming from the origin, the source, the original source. So you can explain that psychological problems come for us when we are not synchronized with that source. When we are out of sync with the source, then we have psychological difficulties. When we learn how to harmonize with the source, then we have, that is called a sane condition. Insanity means to be out, to be not synchronized with the source. Insanity means to be synchronized with the source. This should be introduced now to the, in the modern, this concept should be presented as the basis of modern day psychiatry. I'm asking the psychiatrists that they should adopt this principle, this paradigm, as the basis for modern day psychology. Because this will actually give people the ability to actually become sane themselves and help others to become sane. We have to understand that the insanity, all the different aberrations, the names for psychological and psychiatric aberrations that are floating out there, psychosis, schizophrenia, etc. There's probably thousands of names, I don't know, for all the varieties of nuances of craziness. But the real essence of it all is if you're not in sync with the Supreme, then you're in problems. If you're not in harmony with the source, the origin of all that exists, then you're in problems. But if you are tuned in, if you're in harmony, then you're in great shape. So that's what you really have to do. You have to teach people to harmonize with the universal, the source of all that exists. Will the atheists say there's no source for all that exists?
I didn't go, but what I was trying to ask you, how you can see Krishna in that situation,
See this person is not in harmony with Krishna.
Okay, so that I'm right.
Yeah. They're not in a state of harmony with Krishna. I have to somehow get them to become more in harmony with Krishna.
Because it's some kind of negative energy comes.
That's the material energy.
You know, and then
that's the material, and that's the modes of nature. They are under the, you have to see all these people are under the influence of the modes of nature. You have to somehow bring them out of the modes of nature, bringing them into contact with Krishna on some level or another where they can appreciate. You don't have to say Krishna, you can say, you can talk about it, you can present it. Prabhupada, do you ever study the lectures that Prabhupada used to give at 26 Second Avenue? You know, the common theme that goes through those early lectures? He was saying you have to dovetail your individual consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. That's how Prabhupada preached to those in 26 Second Avenue. They were all Mayavadis who thought they were God. The young hippie boys, they took the LSD and they said, I am Krishna, I am God, I am Buddha, I am Jesus. So he was preaching to them. And he said, you have to dovetail your individual consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. Again and again, those early lectures at 26 Second Avenue, that's how Prabhupada preached, and gradually they got purified and you could talk more directly about the philosophy. So you can tell them you have to dovetail your individual consciousness with the Supreme. You can say there is a Supreme Consciousness. Well, this may be too much for the modern day psychiatrist, but that's a fact. There's a Supreme Consciousness who is aware of everything that's going on throughout the entire existence. We are an individual consciousness. Each one of us is individual consciousness. We are aware of the pains and pleasures within our own body and not much beyond that. But there's a Supreme Consciousness who is aware of the pains and pleasures of everything in all directions throughout the entire totality of existence. So we simply have to dovetail our individual consciousness with that Supreme Consciousness. So Krishna will help you if you really try hard, and you can also, communicate with me by email or telephone or personal meeting, and I can give you more and more ideas about how to infiltrate the world of psychiatry with Krishna Bhakti. In a way that will be acceptable, you see. Yes.
There's a devotee in Vrindavan who takes care of a small cow or any cow really that's like ran over by cars and taxis and whatnot, and they're missing legs. And he takes care of them, his little goshawk. But anyway, he has to give them medicine sometimes, but they don't, they don't eat pills. It's natural for them.
So how does he get him to take the pill?
He hides it inside these little lodges that he makes at home.
Yes.
And brings them in and he...
That's right. So this is a very nice point you've made. That the preacher, he is very expert at hiding the medicine within some nectarian thing. So they will take it. Yes, that's right. This is the expertise of a preacher, because he wants to help the person. So he thinks, how can I somehow or other infiltrate, you know, sneak Krishna consciousness into this person's heart so that they can get the... And this is very nice about this example. So, maybe we could do a little chanting then for a while. I usually start off with chanting, but you had all been chanting very nicely. I can just talk for a while. But so I think we can do a little more chanting, and then I think that, what's the schedule? It's now almost 8 o'clock. The Shadam time now? Chant for, we'll do a little more chanting and then prasadam. Okay, very good. So we thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.